Yeah. Come on. Yeah. Hot fire, hot fire, hot fire, hot fire. Come on. Yeah. We live. We live and outside. Hot fire, hot fire, hot fire, hot fire, hot fire. Come on. What's up, y'all? Welcome to another episode of Tariq Radio. I am your gracious host. My name is Tariq. We're here. It's late in the week, but I wasn't going to leave y'all hanging. Let everybody know that we're live right now, ladies and gentlemen. Why don't y'all retweet this, re-Facebook post this. Let everybody know that we're chopping up some good game right now. And while everybody's piling on in the room, we're going to take that quick commercial break, ladies and gentlemen. So don't you move a muscle, because we got a lot to talk about right here on Tariq Radio.
Listen up, squares. You need to get the legendary book on game, The Art of Mackin', by author Tariq King Flex Nasheed. Available on Amazon right now. Can you dig it? This book has been a bestseller for 20 years, Jack. And the New York Times called it a classic. That means it's out of sight. So this book ain't for no lames who ain't trying to learn the game, jive turkeys. So if you're ready to stop slacking in your mackin', get The Art of Mackin' book on Amazon and Barnes & Noble right now, sucker. Rated PG. That stands for plenty of game, jive chumps.
What's up, family? You guys need to check out this cookie company out of Houston, Texas called The Cookie Confidant. Man, they sell these beautiful, delicious, huge cookies right out of Houston, Texas, man. And the brother has been in business since 2017. And I've tried these cookies, man. They are bomb, bomb, bomb. Very delicious. My personal favorite are the chocolate chip pecan cookies, man. They are bomb. Y'all need to go to cookieconfidant.com. to get these cookies. Black-owned company, man. They got chocolate chip peanut butter cookies, white chocolate cookies with sprinkles, man. So anything you like in a cookie, they got it. So again, go to cookieconfidant.com. That's cookieconfidant.com. Would you like to get off the corporate plantation and start your own business? Well, 3T Staffing Group can show you how to build a lucrative virtual call center business right from your own home in less than 60 days and for less than $1,000. The call center industry in North America alone is currently worth about $28 billion and it's growing every day. 3T Staffing Group, they've created a self-paced online course that will walk you through the process from A to Z, give you all the information and the training you need. Go to 3TStaffingGroup.com for all the details. That's 3TStaffingGroup.com.
Nails keep breaking? Dull skin? Hair just doesn't look or feel right? It's time to get your image back on track with Herbal Organics Hair, Skin, and Nail Formula, designed for low bias and sufferers like you and mine. For just $25, 18-day supply of our vegan-friendly supplements, you'll be on your way to nail and hair length retention as well as brighter skin. Visit HerbalOrganicProducts.com or call 646-389-7258 now for more information. Herbal Organics by KOG. You earned this.
Listen, are you ashy as hell? Do you have dry, parched skin? Does your elbows look like elephant knees? If so, you want to get your skin from crusty to lovely, go to ashkicking.com to get all the lotions, lubricants, and body butters that you need to get your skin in order. They got all types of health and beauty products, everything you need. They got incense, things to make your house smell good, things to make you smell good. So again, go to ashkicking.com. Again, that's ashkicking.com.
Bro, stop playing and start spraying. Leave a op on the ground where you stand. At all costs, yeah, make sure you protect it. Old goon juice, the formula been tested. You can defend yourself if you find that you need a little help. Gotta stay ready, ain't no love in the street. Pepper spray straight to the face, make them get weak. Get it at OldGoonJuice.com. If they thinking you slipping, then tell them to come get them some. If you packing this, you won't be lacking. A shot to the eye in them problems you having. Maximal strip, hit them haters on ground, so you can feel free when you out in the town. Old Goon Juice, and don't forget a shirt, man. You gotta stay ready, that evil on lurk. Yeah.
Okay. You are now tuned into the legendary OG. Tariq Nasheed.
I want to apologize to all my friends.
on Tariq Radio. Where is Tariq getting all this cash?
Oh, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. We're back, ladies and gentlemen. Everybody, glad to have y'all in here. Much respect to everybody in the room. Let me let this beat ride. Much respect to everybody in the room. I was going out, I'm back soon. Sweeping you off with the broom. Giving birth through the womb. That's how shit be sounding these days. Niggas be saying anything. I ate an ice cream sandwich at the store. Then I got me a little piece of dough. Then I went and got me a turkey little burger. Then I got a gun and I had to commit murder. Shooting these niggas all in the thighs. Putting my pinky toe all in your eyes. Niggas saying anything. Anyway, man, what's up, man? We're here. We're here, y'all. Glad to have everybody tuning in, ladies and gentlemen. Man, a lot of stuff going on. I've been doing the shows late during the week, man. And the reason being, man, we've been at the museum getting everything ready for the family. We're getting this museum ready for the family. The museum is looking good. It's looking lovely. Everybody's excited about it, man. Look, we have two big openings at the end of the month. This is Black History Month. We got an opening on the 25th and the 27th, Monday the 27th. That's going to be the general public grand opening. But this big event on the 25th, man, and a lot of people have been asking about the tickets. And the thing is, I haven't put the tickets on sale yet because the tickets are damn near selling out before we even put them on sale. If that makes sense, you know what I'm saying? There's such a demand for people to come to that big grand opening on the 25th that we're trying to determine how many tickets we can actually put on sale now because so many people are coming. So we're trying to make it make sense. It's going to be a phenomenal event. It's going to be a phenomenal event, ladies and gentlemen. I'm very excited about it. A lot of the press is going to be there. It's going to be a very exciting event on the 25th and for the rest of the week, too. But on the 25th, I'm going to be there. We're going to have a dinner. We're going to do a screening. The media is going to be there. We're going to have the red carpet. It's going to be a phenomenal event on the 25th. You dig? It's going to be phenomenal. And I can't wait for you guys to come out and experience the museum. It's history in the making, ladies and gentlemen. This is a monumental moment that we're doing out here in Los Angeles. Yeah, I'm looking at it, man. We might have to do more than one night, but the thing is, for the whole all day, all night event, you know, we can't do them every night, but people can come every day. The museum is going to be open from 11 to 5 every day. Well, Monday through Saturday, I think. Or Tuesday through something. We're working the schedule out now. We're trying to work the schedule out now. But I can't wait for y'all to come, man. Man, we've been pouring our souls into it. We got this thing looking fly. We got so much stuff in the museum. It's a beautiful thing, man. And the people in the community are so proud and everybody's excited. Shout out to the brothers and sisters out here in LA that's been helping out with the museum, man. We got so many talented and skillful brothers and sisters out here with just the little nooks and crannies and the knickknacks that go into maintaining a building. We got brothers who did a lot of electrical work for the building, brothers who did some HVAC work, brothers who did some locksmithing work, just assembling some of the furniture there, brothers in the community, man, thorough brothers out here, man, sisters, we got sisters working there now, my brother Inkwan who did the mural, a lot. I put up a picture on my Instagram and Twitter and people got a little peek of the mural. Wait till y'all see the whole thing. It's pretty much done now. Wait till y'all see the whole thing. We're going to do a reveal pretty soon. But I can't wait for you guys to come on through. And again, the opening of the museum coincides with the opening of the new movie, American Maroon. That's going to be available on fbastream.com. For more information, you can go to american-maroon.com or FBA Stream. Y'all need to be signed up for FBA Stream already. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have not signed up for it already, you can watch all my films at fbastream.com. Ladies and gentlemen, you can watch all the films. Hidden Colors 1 through 5, Buck Breaking, 1804, all my lectures, the Bucci Bear cartoons, the Crispy cartoons, the Ism Radio travel show that we did, the little mini series we did. So that's popping. Somebody said, send my HVAC people to Umar. Y'all stop. Y'all stop it. But listen, let's get into some stuff. Now, y'all retweet this. Let everybody know that we're live. Retweet this real quick, guys. Now, look, listen. So, look, today, guys, did y'all hear the story about them? The government saw some spy balloons floating over Montana. They saw these suspicious balloons just casually floating over Montana. And I think it was kind of floating near a location where there are potentially like nuclear warheads, right? If I'm not mistaken. They had these suspicious balloons that they suspect to be from the Chinese government floating around Montana. You understand? So now people are kind of looking funny style, like, hey, what's going on here? What you mean, what's going on? Come on now. So the Pentagon is looking into it. They're kind of trying to bury it a little bit. They're trying to be low-key about it. This is a serious situation, but they're trying to be low-key about it a little bit. And China says, and this is all cap as far as I'm concerned. Let me show y'all what China said. Hold on. Let me show some of the B-roll. Hold on. U.S. Secretary of State postpones China visit after spy balloon flies over Montana. And China said, what'd they say? China has apologized for the incident, claiming it had been a weather balloon that had flown off course. If y'all don't get the hell out of here, come on now. Come on. They said it was a weather balloon that flew off course. And here's the thing. You know, there's another one down in Latin America right now. Oh, y'all didn't hear about that one. There's another one. Oh, yeah. This was not too long ago, less than an hour ago. There's another one of these Chinese spy balloons spotted over Latin America. So did both of them fly off course? All right. So now there's another one. Pentagon official reject Chinese claims after the intelligence gathering airship was spotted near the Air Force Base. So they're saying that the Pentagon is rejecting their claim. So yeah, they know what it is. This is a problem. They're trying not to get people to panic, but this is a problem. All right. So a second Chinese spy balloon is spotted in Latin America. These folks are setting us up for the whammy bammy, guys. They're setting us up for the whammy bammy. Come on now. And here's the thing. This was done before, by the way. You know, the Japanese did something like this in World War II. Y'all know that? Over in California, out here in California, the Japanese did the same thing. They flew these weather balloons over here, and they started dropping them, and there were bombs on them, and they killed a few people, and they set fires all over the place. Yeah, World War II. Oh, yeah, this happened in World War II. And guess what? It was some brothers. They had to get this, these Buffalo Soldier brothers. That's what they would call a lot of these black infantry units. But yeah, they had to get these brothers, the 555th Parachute Infantry Battalion, to put the fires out. They had to get this all-black unit, the nicknamed the Triple Nickels, the airborne unit of the U.S. Army, to go out here and put the fires out. You always get the brothers to save the day, right? But yeah, this has been done before. This is not new. They're going old school. And we're looking like, damn, the U.S. government, we got trillions and trillions of dollars in this military spending. And these folks are using low-key balloons to fall through. You dig? They're using it works. You dig? Sometimes the low-tech stuff actually works. A lot of they're going back low-tech. Sometimes you try to fight mano a mano, and these folks are like, hey, we'll just send a balloon over there to do our dirty work. Now, let's be clear. Y'all do understand over there in Montana and all of these places, the U.S. government, they let China buy up all of this farmland all over here. Yeah? They let these people buy all of this farmland over here. And here's another thing, family. The thing is, they're coddling all of these other groups in an effort to kind of undermine us, black people. You see? They do these things and give these people leeway to come over here and do whatever. They let people come over here. You don't even have to have documents. And then these people come over and then try to undermine the whole country. You see? All in an effort of them trying to undermine us, it comes back and bites them in the ass. And I'm not shocked because of this. We have some foreign balloon over here that's posing a national threat. This is major, but they're downplaying it because they don't want the public to be outraged, because when people are outraged about a particular external threat, that makes people come together. So they kind of need us divided. They kind of need black people to be the boogeyman. They don't want Asians to be the boogeyman again, because they have to bring them in and use them as buffers to kind of keep us in check. You dig? That's why they've been promoting that Stop Asian Hate thing and all of that stuff and pointing the finger at us, and now it's turning around and biting them in the ass. You dig? Yeah, those balloons could have a slow release or something. You don't know what's in them damn balloons. We don't know what these folks are doing over here. But it always goes full circle. And here's the thing, family. Here's the thing. They sit up here and let folks over here to undermine us. Did y'all see the story just a few days ago? Because I'm not shocked this happened. A few days ago, Minnesota, they're going around bragging about they passed this new driver's license for all bill. Y'all seen that? The new driver's license for all bill. Minnesota House passes driver's license for all. So now you can come over here. All right. Hold on, let me find this. Wait, let me find this right here. So yeah, this is them celebrating. So they're celebrating. So they're over there. I don't know what language they're using, all types of different languages. So they're celebrating the license for all, driver's license for all bill. So basically, undocumented people can come over here and get a damn driver's license. Okay? And all of this is an effort to undermine us. It's trying to undermine Foundation of Black Americans, to try to replace our political power, our social power, us working and aggregating our resources as a group. This is, they've always tried to flood the zone with all of these outsiders to undermine us. And they're letting people come over here. You don't have to have documents and you can get a driver's license. And you got to understand, if somebody can get a driver's license, you can get a damn social security number. You dig? And if you get a social security number, you get a whole life. So if somebody come over here, back in your homeland, you were probably a serial killer. No telling what you were back home. A serial killer, a spy, an agent with the government in your homeland. You just mosey on over here. Somebody just give you a damn license. You dig? You just come over here and somebody give you a whole new identity. You come over here and your whole background is erased. You come over here with an accent and light skin to a certain degree. Yeah, hey man, I'm an undocumented immigrant. Now come on over here, Minnesota, and get this license. And understand, if you get a license in Minnesota, that means you can get a license anywhere. Once you get a license in one state, you can get a license in all the other states. You know that? It's not just Minnesota. It's not just Minnesota. Once you get a license in one state, you can get anything else in any other state. You now have official ID. You can get anything you need. Not only that, you get a fresh line of credit. So you got these people, 35, 40 years old, who racked up all types of debt back home. Bad business deals, bad credit back home. They come over here, you 35, 40 years old, all of that's wiped out. You got a 700 credit score. So now you come over here, bam, you get your business going on, you get your business loan, collateral, all types of stuff popping. And then folks turn to us. We don't get none of that. We are boggled down with student loan debt, all types of debt and financial woes that's been following us for 20 and 30 years, and then people come and tell us to pull ourselves up by the damn bootstraps. Hey, look at me. I did it. I came over with $3. Well, you came over with $3 and a whole line of credit, and your whole background was wiped out, and zero debt following you from the place you fled from. You dig? So yeah, we don't let people run that game on us. We have to tell the whole story about how this goes down. And once people come over here and you change your whole background, you get to wipe your background off. Now you don't know who's over here. Then all of a sudden, we got spy balloons flying all over the damn place. You see what I'm saying? So you don't know who the hell we done let over here trying to undermine us. We don't know who's over here. But things always go back full circle, family. Things go back full circle. Because the universe has a way to kind of correct things. Like I said, in World War II, they sat here and tried to prioritize some of the Asians over us, the Japanese over us, and the Japanese turned around and bombed the country, and it was brothers who had to go put some of those fires out. And also out here in L.A., when they were California, when they were putting Japanese people in those internment camps. Did y'all know out here in L.A., where are my L.A. people? Where are my Los Angeles people? Out here in Los Angeles, downtown in Little Tokyo, that became a black area. That became a place called Bronzeville. Where are my Los Angeles people? For a short period of time, when the Japanese were put in those camps, they needed people to be in those areas. There was an area in Los Angeles, downtown L.A., all black area called Bronzeville. Black people were coming in from the South, Louisiana, Texas, coming through and living in Bronzeville, and they had Bronzeville popping. They had, when we go somewhere, we make stuff pop the hell off. They had, the brothers and sisters had Bronzeville popping. It was a short-lived place. Hold on, let me show y'all a picture of it real quick. This is like an article about it. You see the black folks standing in front of the Japanese decor out there in downtown. This is like 1944. Yeah, there's a Bronzeville all over the U.S. Yeah. That's what they used to call black areas. They would call them Bronzevilles, or they would call them, upscale black areas, they would call them Sugar Hills. Do any of you have a Sugar Hill in your area? Yeah, they would either call them Bronzeville. They always gave black areas these little nicknames. One area down in Tennessee, it was called the Mink Slide. That's where I got the name of the group from. There was an area called the Mink Slide. And I thought that name, I've heard that name a long time ago, just studying history. And I thought, that's a cool ass name. I always thought, Mink Slide, that's a cool ass name. That is a cool name. We named the group that and it popped off. But yeah, Sugar Hill, New York City had a Sugar Hill, right? Is there Sugar Hill? Where's there another Sugar Hill? Where we have our museum out here in Los Angeles? Where we have our museum, it's in the Jefferson Park area. The Jefferson Park, West Adams area, that was called Sugar Hill at one point because black people moved in that area and it was kind of an upscale black area. A lot of black celebrities in the 1940s lived in the Sugar Hill area, the Adams Jefferson Park area, right over here where we got our museum. The very upscale black area. Pearl Bailey lived there. Hattie McDaniel lived there. I think Ray Charles lived there. Very rich culture there. What happened? Let me tell y'all some slick stuff that happened over there. In the 1940s, the white people were trying to get the black people to move. The white people didn't like black people over there in the Sugar Hill, Jefferson Park, Adams area, living in those nice houses. So they tried to play the restrictive covenant game. So they tried to get black people to move. They were trying to get even the black celebrities. Yeah, Nat King Cole lived there too. That's true. The church, there's a church that's still over there now, the oldest black church in Los Angeles, First AME is over there in Jefferson Park, right where our museum is. That church was founded by Biddy Mason, who was the richest black woman in the country, who was a former slave, and we are paying homage to Biddy Mason in the museum. You dig? But what was interesting over there where we are in Jefferson Park in the Sugar Hill area, the former Sugar Hill area, they were trying to move black people out in the 1940s. And it was a white judge. I wonder, what was his name? It was a judge who basically was the first time that somebody, a judge, enforced the 14th Amendment. The judge said, hey, look, according to the 14th Amendment, these black people can live here. Yeah, I know we usually do the I'm white and I say so, but I'm going to try to have some kind of honor. This was a white judge, and I take my hat off to him for having some kind of honor. He's like, well, these black people live here. We have a 14th Amendment, equal protection under the law. Everybody's treated equal, you know, regardless of race. So they are allowed to stay here. That was the first time that the 14th Amendment was really enforced, when this white judge said that, hey, you can't put these black people out this area. So what the white supremacists did, you know what they did? When the Supreme Court, they couldn't get the Supreme Court to do their dirty work, they put the 10 freeway there and split the neighborhood up. That's why the 10 freeway was there. That's why they put the 10 freeway right in the middle of Sugar Hill. They put the 10 freeway there. They always do that. Central Avenue over there, where all those thriving black businesses were, they put the 110 freeway over there to kind of break up those businesses. But yeah, that's why they put the 10 freeway right there in that area. They put it directly over the Black Sugar Hill area. Yeah. And basically dispersed a lot of the businesses there. But guess what? We're back. Oh, we're back. The ancestors then brought us back over there, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, we're back. We're back over there in Sugar Hill. And we're making it do what it do. So we got to understand the little games that they play when it comes to us, man. Black family, don't let nobody tell you anything about pulling up no damn bootstraps. Man, the stuff that they do to us, that they've been doing to us and undermining us every chance they get. Nobody has ever had to do or go through any of that stuff. Nobody. Nobody's had to go through any of that. The turkey leg hut down there. There's another lawsuit that they're trying to throw on them. Every other week they throw lawsuits at that black business out there. They hate the fact that black business is so successful that there's a line around the corner and people are just flooding that business with money. All they've been doing, they've been trying to undermine that business. You've never seen that, family. Now they're saying that they didn't pay their rent. Like last week, they were saying they didn't pay a distributor. At one point, they said that it was a smoke, some kind of smoke detection there. It was something, smoke pollution. Every other week, they got something where they're trying to undermine that black business simply because it's successful. You don't see them doing that to none of these Asian businesses, these little taco stands. You never see that with these other businesses. You never see it. You never see it. I want our family, the black family, to know we got to be on code with each other and stick together and make sure that we look out for each other so that these other folks don't undermine us. And when we get undermined and our businesses or whatever we try to do falls by the wayside, we think it was because we didn't have the right work ethic. We start blaming ourselves, and it's usually some outside forces that's throwing a monkey wrench in the game. I really want us to understand that. We got to understand the outside forces, because look, out here, I've been working with so many brothers and sisters out here with the museum, and we got so many thorough, talented people out here. LA got a lot of hardworking, talented people who just usually don't have the opportunity to show their damn talent. When you give us the opportunity, and when we create the opportunity, that's the thing we need to start doing. We need to create the opportunities to get our stuff popping so that we can bring other brothers and sisters in who are like-minded, who can get things going, and we can start building. That's one of the reasons why we're doing the museum. I want us to have a safe space where folks can chop it up and do our thing and just be around like-minded people. Yeah, I saw that when you had some of the mammies down there going in the turkey leg hut naked and it would take, you know, yeah, I saw that lowbrow gutter nonsense. You know, you people like that, and somebody made a reference in the chat room. The Turkey Leg Hut, they had a dress code. They're like, look, we can't have people coming up in here just dressed any kind of way. You know, this is a family place. Don't come in here acting ratchet. So one hood rat decided to promote her OnlyFans page by showing up to the Turkey Leg Hut butt naked. You know, a little dirt bag nonsense like that. That happens because you got to understand there's a lot of people who don't want to get off the plantation. When you start talking about building things and being independent and getting off the plantation, that scares a lot of Negroes. That scares a lot of mammies, Negroes, bedwenches. You dig? So they try to do things to undermine any type of progressive movements we try to make. We got to understand that. But I'm very excited about everybody coming out to the museum out here in Los Angeles. It's going to really be popping. And, you know, this goes against the whole thing about us having to move to the South. I know a lot of people are like, we all need to move to the South. No, we don't. No. We need to stay right where we are and just be on code. We ain't got to move nowhere. We can get stuff popping anywhere we are. This is our country. We built this whole thing, dude. We don't have to concentrate in one area because the only thing that needs to be on the same accord is the codified mindset. The codified mindset needs to be all on code. That needs to be in the same place. Having the right codified mindset of empowerment, that has to be in the right place. Because again, like I said, going down south and you got these jump out boys like the Scorpions or whoever the hell they were called out there in Tennessee beating up brothers, I'm cool. I don't want to go down there to that. That's not a good selling point. I damn sure don't want to go down there to that. You dig? That whole jump out boy culture. And yet them getting the black jump out boys, that ain't it. That ain't it. But you know what? There's always been this whole mindset of vigilantism, this jump out boyism when it comes to us. This whole thing about ambushing black people. Again, that whole thing where when white people couldn't lynch black people en masse and just take pictures of it, when we said we shut that down. We shut that down in the 60s. We said, you know what? Emmett Till was the last straw. The last real significant lynching in this country was Emmett Till. That was the last straw. We said, nah, that's it. Ain't going to be no public lynchings and all of that. That's not going to happen no more. We ain't doing that no more. If y'all get at us, we're going to have to go toe to toe. You're going to have to sneak up on us or whatever. But it ain't going to be one of these. Y'all just snatch somebody up and take them somewhere and lynch them. That ain't happening no more. That's not going to happen. And where everybody's gathering around. No. That's not happening. So in the 60s, black people started turning up. Black people started turning up in the 60s. So the dominant society, they figured, okay, we have to start ambushing these Negroes. We got to start kind of finding an angle to catch them alone and ambush them and come up with ways to justify ambushing them. So in the 70s, we saw a whole plethora of movies about ambushing black people, like the Dirty Harry movies, the Death Wish, that Charles Bronson fantasy where these white men go out in the streets and find these black thugs and get revenge on them, that whole Dirty Harry fantasy bullshit. And they started living it out in the 80s to a certain degree. Remember Bernard Goetz? Bernard Goetz, his white boy went out there, this racist white boy went out there on some vigilante Dirty Harry stuff and killed some brothers in New York, and white people kind of rallied behind Bernard Goetz. He became a folk hero in white supremacist society. And then fast forward, who we got? Zimmerman. Zimmerman was a part of that ambush, Dirty Harry, Bernard Goetz, Clint Eastwood type of thing, you know, running up on an innocent kid and ambushing him. And then white society sat here and co-signed that man and let him get off. Kyle Rittenhouse is a part of that too, right? Kyle Rittenhouse, that's a part of that whole vigilantism. Yeah, that Steven Seagal. Yeah, there's this white man that's going to go out here in the streets and clean the streets up of the black criminal element, that type of fantasy stuff. It's all cap. It's all cap. And then speaking of Steven Seagal, see, Steven Seagal, he tries to buy into that for real, Steven Seagal's little fat, chunky ass. You know, he's known for kind of trying to push up on certain people and kind of punk them and try to use his karate moves and all this stuff on people behind the scenes. And he's kind of known for sneak hitting stuntmen, like people being scenes with him. Yeah, Rocky is another one. Yeah, but that's something different, though. That's not vigilantism. That's revisionist history. But Steven Seagal was kind of known, you know, outside of just the movies, his fantasy movies of, you know, beating up brothers, trying to pull some of that stuff on the stuntmen and people on set. And he's gotten into it with a couple of people. And I know my brother Michael Jai White worked with him, and he didn't pull that on Michael Jai White, though. Steven Seagal knew who to pull that bullshit on. He knew not to pull that on no Michael Jai White. Yeah, Steven Seagal, all he's known for. Yeah, y'all remember that little reality show he did where he was going out with the police, fighting crime in New Orleans with the police? That corny ass show he did. He's going out there to fight crime in Jefferson Parish with the police. Get the hell out of here. So yeah. So he was known for doing little sneak hits and sneak jabs on stuntmen on the set, but he damn sure didn't do that with Michael Jai White at all. No, Michael told me personally how it went down. No, he wasn't going to do that. He's like, wait, ain't no, he ain't that much fantasizing in the world, you know? Yeah, it wasn't that much fantasizing in the, him and John Leguizamo got into a fight. I believe that. Yeah, I believe that. I believe that. Yeah. Steven Seagal knew who to pull that on for real. Yeah, he wasn't about to pull that bullshit on Michael Jai White. Michael Jai White can kill somebody with his bare hands. And let me tell you something. The thing about it, man, my brother Mike, he has the mindset of, you know, that's power. That's power to be able to knock somebody's damn head off, but you just don't do it. You understand? That's a powerful thing to have at your disposal. You know, I'm capable of really ripping your ass up, but I decide not to do it. I'm going to contain that. See, that's the power that a lot of the dominant society wants to have. They want that power, but they always misuse it. See, they have the power, and they talk about this in their little seminars about being able to be extremely violent, but then trying to contain the violence. How's my audio, guys? Is my audio good? Somebody said my audio is doubling. Hold on. My audio good, guys? Am I good? How's my audio doing? I hope it's good. Somebody. But anyway, like I said, a lot of the dominant society, they want to have the mindset where you're supposed to be dangerous. You don't want to be a nice person. You want to be capable of violence and danger, but you want to contain it. You understand? But here's the thing, the dominant society, you have to contain your violence and your ability to be disturbing. You have to be able to practice that by being codified with a bunch of other people with the same mindset. And that's a weakness to a certain degree. It's a strength and it's a weakness, because alone you're weak, but you need other like-minded white supremacists in order for you to practice that demonic violence. So that's kind of an Achilles heel to a certain degree. So it's, your power is contingent upon multiple people being of the same demonic mindset as you. You understand? It's real interesting. They like the concept of being able to be violent and dangerous, having the capacity to be dangerous, but you contain it. See, they tell us the opposite. See, they teach us, don't be dangerous. Black people, you have to forgive. See, this is what they tell us. They tell us, well, you don't be, your masculinity is toxic. You don't want to practice toxic masculinity. You have to be nice. You have to forgive. You have to, what would Jesus do, Negro? Look at John Lewis. What would John Lewis do? You think? They try to teach us the John Lewis soft, docile approach to living life. And they teach their people the exact opposite. See, they teach our children to put our boys, they teach black boys, we'll put him in a dress and put him on some makeup and some eyelashes and let him be non-binary. How dare you assign a gender to that boy or them? Why would you assign a gender to them? I'm not going to call him a he or a her. It's a them. He's non-gendered. They play that with us, but they give a white boy a gun and take him in the woods and teach him, okay, shoot right there between the eyes. Yeah, the movie Falling Down. Yes, a very, very good point. The movie Falling Down was about that too. A white man going out there being a vigilante. So like I said, this is what buck breaking is about. That's what the whole concept of buck breaking. They needed to buck break brothers to make them docile. They either got to buck break you or drug you up. This is why they're always trying to drug us up. They're always trying to put us in a position where we are docile, weak, submissive, whiny. You got a lot of whiny fuck niggas out here, and they love promoting that. You understand what I'm saying? They don't want us being dangerous or having the potential of danger. And if we are dangerous, and here's the thing, a lot of black people lose their power because if you are dangerous or you're a violent person, or if you have the capacity to be violent, you don't know how to contain it. You see? Which is going to make you an easy target. If you're a violent person or you have the capacity for violence and you don't know how to contain it, you're just going around being a big brute, well, they can handle your ass. Oh, there's a brute. Look at him. We see his actions. So any punishment towards you will be justified. You see? But a person who has the ability to be dangerous, to even be violent, but they contain it, that's the thing that scares folks, especially when it comes to black folks. You dig? Especially when it comes to us. See, that's why they like us singing and dancing all the time. You understand what I'm saying? They love us singing and dancing. They like to see our emotions. They don't like black people who are not singing and dancing. Black people, for example, black people, especially black women. Black women, when you go to work, notice when you ain't smiling and grinning all the time, they label you as an angry black woman. They really do that to sisters. If a sister ain't like a jolly mammy, if you ain't skinning and grinning and showing all your teeth, what's wrong with LaQuisha? She's so angry. God, LaQuisha had an attitude. Where's the attitude from? If a black woman, if you ain't skinning and grinning at the job, you're the angry black woman. You have an attitude. They go on alert just because you ain't in there shucking and jiving. You're in there handling your business, but if you ain't shucking and jiving, they're on alert. Is anything wrong with her? See, that's scary. Us being serious and being contained, because all you're doing, black woman, is just being contained. You just, hell, I'm working. I ain't trying to skin and grin. I'm trying to work and pay my damn bills. So if you're serious and if you're not acting like a big plantation mammy, they want to know what's wrong. You think? They want to know what the hell is going on with you. And if a brother, you go into corporate America, and if you ain't switching your hips, uh-oh, what's the problem with him? You think? What's his problem? You know, they want to see you switch your hips. They want to think that you soft. Because, see, they'll get another T.J. Holmes situation. See, that's another situation with T.J. Holmes. See, he contained his power. They brought T.J. Holmes into Good Morning America. He was the docile, polite, light-skinned Negro, looked kind of soft. Hey, good morning, America. I'm out here. I'm T.J. Holmes with these good white folks. And yeah, you know, that type of thing. And then behind the scenes, T.J. Holmes, he was in there banging women in the office, banging them dudes' wives, smacking them on the ass. So now they're calling him a predator. T.J. Holmes, oh, he was predatory. Oh, that predatory Negro. They done darkened him up. His pictures look a little bit darker now. Oh, they're like, they're in there complaining. Oh, God, I knew something was up. I came to work smelling all of the goddamn hot sauce in here. I knew it. Oh, I knew it. I smelled Lowry's seasoning salt. Oh, I knew that Negro was up to something. But, yeah, they have a problem with us not showing our emotion. When we contain ourselves, that's a threat, guys. That's a threat. When we as Black people are contained and they don't know what we're thinking, they don't know what we're capable of, that scares them. Because they're like, that dude might be potentially dangerous. They don't want another Micah Johnson. Remember, Micah Johnson just came out of nowhere and did what he did down there in Texas. Oh, they don't like that. That's why the FBI started visiting everybody when Micah Johnson did what he did down there. Are there any more you Negroes out here that's contained that we don't know about? You see? The dominant white society, they like to have that power of contained vengeance. They even do movies about it. Well, shows about it. That's what the whole Incredible Hulk thing was about. A lot of their movies and a lot of their monster characters are based on that. Dracula is based on that. That whole thing where he's a charming vampire, but he's capable of violence, but he can contain it and be charming. He's really a creature of the night, but he can contain that and be charming. And the Hulk, the Bruce Banner, the character Bruce Banner, he's a meek white scientist, but because of this experiment, this radiation thing that happened, there's a beast inside of him. And when he gets mad, he turns into a raging green monster with muscles. And the, remember, the Hulk is, the green is a representation of melanin. Again, the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde thing, that's another play on that. That old story about Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, the doctor takes the formula and turns into Mr. Hyde. But Jeffrey Dahmer. But the Hulk, remember, the Hulk in the green thing, that represents melanin. Yeah, there's a big inner Black guy inside. Green has always had a representation of melanin. You dig? Because a lot of us have green pigment when we're being produced. Chlorophyll is basically like melanin in plants. So chlorophyll and melanin kind of go hand in hand. There's a real interesting connection on that. Oh, yeah, yeah. We can get real deep. Yeah, chlorophyll and melanin. Yeah, I don't want to get too deep. I'm just kind of going on a tangent here, but I'm just throwing that out there. The chlorophyll and melanin. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, how many of y'all are born with green birthmarks on you? Or your kids had a green birthmark? A lot of you ladies got, y'all still got them green birthmarks, because you know, sometimes when, you know, brothers are hitting it from the bike, we can see them green birthmarks y'all be having on your ass. You know, some of that chlorophyll melanin that's still showing. You dig? But yeah, a lot of it's some heavy stuff. We can go into that. That's a whole different thing. I have to do a whole show about that. But yeah, there's green pigment too. Your nephew has it. Yeah, there's a reason why you put on certain jewelry. You put on like certain jewelry and your neck turns green. Usually I think if you put on something, that jewelry that's really copper and not gold, and that copper starts clicking in with your skin and turns it back green. Yeah, it's some heavy stuff, man. It's some heavy stuff, yo. So that green pigment and melanin, all of that's kind of clicked in. Because, you know, we're from the planet. We're from the earth. And, you know, melanin and chlorophyll is damn near one and the same. You know? So your cousin has it on his forehead? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Chlorophyll and melanin, it's like they're twins damn near. It's some heavy stuff, man. It's some heavy stuff. Yeah. Bottom line, we're of the earth. We are earth people. We're earth people. We're sun people. All of that. We're all one, dude. As Black folks, we are all, so we all can turn into Hulks. It's some heavy stuff as far as that stuff. Yeah. All your children got the green birthmarks on them. There you go. Yeah. Asar. Yeah, the green god, the Lord of the Perfect Black. Yeah, if you look at some of those old Egyptian tombs, some of them would portray them as green. Yeah, some of them were portrayed as green. So when you hear these stories about these little green men, who are these little green men that these Martians or these aliens that we've always heard about for so long? Yeah, deep shit. Heavy stuff. But going back to containing that beast within, there's always been that narrative and that dichotomy with the dominant society being able to practice violence and maintain violence, but then having the ability to do it, but then contain it. And the thing is with us, they try to promote either you be ultra violent all the time so that we can contain you, or you be ultra passive and don't be violent or don't be dangerous at all. You know? And there's a balance to that. There's a balance to that. It's real heavy stuff. Because we got to understand history. We got to understand who we are. We got to understand that this whole passive thing, that's not us. That's not who we are. We're not supposed to be passive and letting people abuse us and all that stuff. You stand up for yourself. And there's dignity in doing that. And historically, we've stood up for ourselves. But that narrative of us standing up for ourselves and being independent and interdependent among each other, that has been a narrative that has always been erased. You dig? And for the folks in the dominant society, the name of the game for them is to make sure that everybody's on code so that ultimately they can utilize their code against us. If there's going to be a boogeyman, the boogeyman should be the designated black folks. We should designate them as the boogeyman. And again, sometimes the universe cleans that up. Somebody mentioned the Haitian Revolution. I get on that in a second. See, the universe has a way of correcting things. You know, things will get janky and then the universe can correct certain things. But in order for them to practice white supremacy on us, it's imperative that they get the dominant society on code, and they have to have incentives for them to be on code. Yeah. Now they're exploiting them too, but they still have to have incentives for them to be on code. So some of the incentives are like immunity of law. So you can get away with certain crimes. But here's the problem. When you are the kind of person who can get away with certain crimes, those crimes turn in on the dominant society. So they have this thing where we'll let white people do all of these mass shootings and we won't punish them. And then they go and that encourages more people to do it. Like, for example, Kyle Rittenhouse, right after they let him kill two people and get off, y'all saw there was a plethora of other mass shootings of other white teens around his age. And they were shooting white people. They were going around shooting white people. So their janky code fell back on them and it kicked them in the ass. You dig? They're sitting here trying to undermine black people by letting up all these undocumented foreigners coming in here. So now we got spy balloons all over the place. You dig? They shoot themselves in the foot all the time because justice in the universe will correct itself. So we have to be ready when there's a correction of the universe. We have to be ready. You understand what I'm saying? We got to be ready. So we can't be corrupted so that when the universal vengeance is taken upon those who go against the universe's energy, we get caught up in that whirlwind. See, we got to be on top of our square. We got to have the right mindset. You understand? And they've always tried to get white people on code for the BS. That, you know, that's what the whole pirate thing is about. And we got something at our museum, by the way, where we're talking about black pirates. Do y'all know the whole pirate thing where there was a golden age of piracy, the European pirates? And truth be told, about 30% of the pirates were black. But the pirate thing was them. It was really about European society kind of trying to get on code. It was them trying to get on code because, listen, what was happening in Europe, the whole pirate thing started popping off right when the transatlantic slave trade popped off. Okay. Hold on. Update. U.S. jet shot down the thing in Montana. Hold on. Wait. I'm getting some breaking news here. Hold on. Let me see something. Wait, let me see if this is correct. Hold on. Did they shoot the thing down? Hold on. Hold on. Let me see. I'm looking at, let me go check Twitter. Let me see if that's true. Hold on. I'm looking now. Let me check Twitter and look now. Oh, and did they shoot it? Okay, I think they did shoot it. Hold on. Hold on. Wait. Hold on. Well, let me see. Hold on. Let me double check. From what I understand, they didn't shoot it. Hold on. Let me see if they shot it or not. They can't wait. Now they said, they're saying one went over Canada now. Hold on. Okay. I don't see anything where they explosion in the sky. Okay. What the hell is going on now? Wait, hold on now. Explosion in the sky where the balloon was. Seeing jet bloom. Okay. Refusing. Okay. I'm still seeing they didn't shoot it down. They have another one. Okay. Hold on. What's going on with this damn balloon? Okay. I don't know what's going on with the balloon. But I'm looking. They said that there was an explosion in the sky. What the hell are these folks doing with these balloons, man? Okay. Let me look at Google. Hold on. Because I don't want nothing to pop off. Okay. Hold on. I'm still looking. Okay. I don't see anything about them shooting it down yet. Okay. So somebody must have been in here capping. All right, hold on. Okay, yeah, nobody shot that thing down. Wait, was it taken down? Okay, an explosion was. Okay, so yeah, so the person wasn't capping. No, nobody's really sure yet. So they said there was an explosion. So there's a question whether it was taken down. So this is what I'm seeing on the news feed. This is was the Chinese spy balloon taken down by the U.S.? Here's what happened. Okay. Okay, nobody know. I don't know what's happening with it yet. So y'all keep me abreast what's going on. We don't know what's happening with it yet. All right. Lord. So somebody's telling lies. It's more than one. Okay, what the hell is going on, man? We need to keep our eyes and ears open, man. Because this sounds more serious than what they're trying to make it. Yeah. So like I was saying, I was talking about the pirate thing, guys. I was talking about the pirate thing. Piracy that came about, the golden age of piracy came about around the same time as the transatlantic slave trade. All right. The pirates, many of them for years, they have given the pirates a bad rap, and not all of them were good or whatever, but the pirates were not morally superior over anybody, but the dominant society, they've given pirates a bad rap. They've made pirates out to be just these lawless, reckless drunkards who was just pillaging the oceans just for the sake of doing it. And that wasn't necessarily the case in many instances. Yeah, Blackbeard was caught in South Carolina. You know, Blackbeard's ship, Queen Anne's Revenge, that was his ship. Blackbeard, yeah. Queen Anne's Revenge was a slave ship. Before it was Queen Anne's Revenge. Did you know most pirate ships were actually slave ships? The pirates were robbing slave ships. That's where they were getting the ships from. Most of those pirate ships were actually slave ships. They were formerly slave ships. The pirates were stealing those slave ships and in many cases helping to free the black people on them. Some cases they left them on there. Some pirates kind of, they sold them here or there. But for the most part, yeah, a lot of folks don't know that. Many of the pirates were basically like the Antifa of their day. They were like Antifa to a certain degree. The pirates, they were people from Europe who were dissatisfied with the status quo. Remember, capitalism was just starting as we know it. Capitalism as we know it was just starting. And remember, black people were the capital. So you had a bunch of rich Europeans who had basically exploited the poor working class in Europe. So they were about to come over here and, you know, get things popping with the money and bring black folks over here and exploit more. So you had these disheveled and disgruntled people in Europe who were like, you know what? This rich landowner had me in a damn debtor's prison, and now I ain't got no work. I can't work. I can't feed my family. So, you know, I'm about to go rob his ship. Since they got all of these people and they put them in ships and they going to ship them over, man, let's go rob the ships and let's thwart their little enterprise they got going on. So that's what a lot of the pirates were doing. They were over there robbing the slave ships and freeing a lot of slaves. And that's why you see in the Pirates of the Caribbean and all of that stuff, many of those pirates were actually black. And many of those pirates, those black pirates, were commanders of some of the slave ships over the white people. And on these pirate ships, which were former slave ships, they had somewhat of a democracy there. They didn't have any racial hierarchy in many of the pirate ships. The black people got equal vote. They had somewhat of a democracy on the pirate ships, where the black, they go rob a ship, they go rob somebody, and everybody shared the wealth. You know, they would share the money. Yeah, you had a lot of famous black pirates. Black Caesar, there were two Black Caesars. There was Black Caesar, the one from Africa. He was an African chief, and he came over, and he got shipwrecked, and he was down there in Florida putting in work. And there was another one, Henry Caesar, who was from Haiti, and he was a part of the Haitian Revolution. He was a famous pirate. Yeah, it's some heavy stuff. We got all this in the museum, guys. Yeah, we talk about this in the museum. Yeah, we breaking all of this stuff down in the museum. That's where the term, the first Maroons were these black people who were working with the pirates down in Central America, in the Caribbean. These were the first Maroons because they were getting at Spain. Spain was bringing Moors over here who were enslaved. So the Moors would come over, and many of the Moors would blend in with the black aboriginal people that were over here, and they would duck and dodge away from the Spanish, and they would join with the French and the English to fight the Spanish. Real heavy stuff. And these were the Maroons. The word Maroon comes from Cimarron. That was a Spanish word for runaway. So they were looking for these Maroons, and these Maroons said, hey, I'll be safer on one of these ships, on one of these pirate ships, putting in work. And one of the most successful pirates, guys, a lot of folks don't know, is this pirate named Lawrence de Graaf. He was one of the most successful pirates. He had he had a crew of like 2,000 people. He was a commander, and Lawrence de Graaf was putting in work. He hated the Spanish. He was born in Holland, I think, and they enslaved him in the Canary Islands, and then they took him to the Caribbean, I think, and he had a vendetta against the Spanish, and they were terrified of this dude, and he was very successful, and they've always portrayed him as a blonde-haired, blue-eyed man, and he wasn't. He was a black dude. Lawrence de Graaf. Y'all look that up. If you see images of him, they'll still try to say that he's white. He wasn't white. This was a black dude. But they didn't want to tell people that he was black, because that would have inspired other black people to rise the hell up. Because during that time of the golden age of piracy, remember, this is around slave time. I mean, the transatlantic slave trade is popping. And they were terrified of black people rising up against those slave owners. They were terrified of slave rebellions. They were terrified of it. So they didn't want to get the word out that there's a black man out here with 2,000 people behind him attacking slave ships all over the place. They didn't want people to know that, because you're on a plantation and you hear about that. Wait a minute, you got me out here picking tobacco and there's a brother whooping y'all asses out here, and all I got to do is get to the shore? All right. So they're like, yeah, there's a dude, he's a pirate, but he's white. Yeah. Oh, they've been lying about him for years. Lawrence de Graaf was not white. Yeah, he was not white at all. And they'll try to concede. They're like, yeah, some people said he was blonde, but he might have been mulatto. That's their little concession. When they say somebody's mulatto, that's them trying to downplay their blackness. Well, he's a person of African and European ancestry. Hell, most foundational black Americans are that. Yeah. So, yeah, we talk about that in the museum. We got a display of that. This is the kind of hidden history that we're bringing to the table, ladies and gentlemen. we're bringing that kind of hidden history to the table. You dig? Oh, the Black History Month police cars down there in Florida, right? Somebody mentioned down in Florida, they had some Black History Month cars. I'm like, oh, give me a damn break. Oh, it looks so condescending. It looks extremely condescending. I'm not impressed. I'm tired of these condescending ass people. Speaking of condescending, did y'all see AOC with her performative nonsense? Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She was trying to do her sister girl, wagging her hand around at some a foreign affairs committee, whatever. She's trying to do her sister girl act. She kills me, and she's all stumbling and fumbling. Hold on, let me show y'all girl real quick. She's wagging that hand around, all flicked it. Oh, it's so corny and cheesy. This is y'all girl. Y'all love her performative sister girl act. Hold on. God. Here she go. Hold on.
Don't tell me that this is about a condemnation of anti-Semitic remarks when you have a member of the Republican caucus who has talked about Jewish space lasers and an entire amount of tropes and also elevated her to some of the highest committee assignments in this body. This is about targeting women of color in the United States of America. Don't tell me, because I didn't get a single apology. My life was threatened. Thank you.
Oh, God, this woman is so fucking corny. God, Lord, this woman is so corny. Oh, God, y'all get your girl, man. Why is y'all girl so corny, dude? With the fake sister. Don't tell me ain't nothing wrong with working as a janitor or a maid. Remember when she tried to do the fake Southern voice inflection God. Give me a knife. Lord, give me a knife. Get your girl. Lord, she's so damn fake. They love to have this little animosity towards sisters, but boy, y'all love to try to get your little sister girl on. Y'all always trying to act like some FBA sisters. They always try to get that FBA sister swag. It just ain't there. Did Ilhan Omar get dropped? They get her out the paint? Oh, they love to try to get that fake FBA, and it's all FBA, by the way. Is they everybody tries to get that FBA sister girl swag, and it ain't it. Nah. It just ain't hidden. You just don't have it. You know. And speaking of non-FBA, did y'all see the situation? It was something down there in Florida, and I'm not gonna play the video. There was a fight on a school bus. A little girl, I think the girl might have been Cuban. I don't know what she was. She was a lighter skin girl. She wasn't white. She kind of looks white, but she wasn't white. A lot of the right wing websites and stuff are making a big hababaloo about this story where these black kids, one black teen is beating up a third grade girl or something. I don't know what happened on the bus. I don't know. He shouldn't have been beating on that little girl like that. And this is what, third grader beating on school bus, shock school district. Okay, I'm not going to show it, but you know, it's kind of a big, he's like a bigger teen and the girl is in the third grade. What? I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened before or after. I don't know. But this happened over there at the Coconut Palm K-8 school in Homestead. That's a Caribbean area over there. That's a heavily Caribbean area. So this is non-FBA business. So it ain't got nothing to do with us. But yeah, I would say that's not cool. Beating up on a little girl or whatever, that's not cool. That's not cool at all. And I pointed out in the tweet I made, how many folks would, I didn't know we had these many people in the room right now. Yeah, he was wrong for that. And then we had some people pop in the comment section, hey, why are you talking about his ethnicity, nigga? No. Why are you being divisive? Oh, no. Because there was another video, and I'm not going to show that either. I think it's in L.A. This is one dude who looked like he's Ethiopian or Somalian. He sucker punched this homeless black woman in a CVS pharmacy. And I put the tweet up, and it went viral. And people are looking for that dude. People are actually looking for the dude who did that. because that wasn't cool. And the dude is clearly non-FBA. You can tell that the dude wasn't FBA. And then folks get mad. Why are you niggas talking about ethnicity? Why are you being divisive? No, we're not going to play that game. Hold on. Let me show. I'm not going to show the dude actually hitting lady, but this is a screenshot of it. Let me show y'all this, because I'm not going to show. I want to get dinged. But yeah, this dude right here, this is not an FBA dude. This dude is not FBA, and this went viral when I tweeted it. So that's not an FBA dude. And the dude, people done found his Twitter, and he done made his Twitter private, and people are looking for this dude, rightfully so. He sucker punched this sister. You know? So that dude is clearly not FBA. And then folks want to get mad when we point out that some of this stuff that's being done is non-FBA people doing it. Oh, why are you niggas being divisive? No. We're not going to play that divisive game, because the minute you win something, the minute you got to win on your voice, on your the minute you got to win on the board, you go out of your way to divide yourselves from us. So we're keeping that same energy. If you're going to take your wins from us, we want you to take your losses too. That's the thing. Yeah, they're looking for that dude in LA. People are saying, people don't know exactly where that CVS pharmacy is, but people were going up there looking for dude. My thing is, look, if you want to take your wins, take your losses with you. You're not going to take your wins with you and take them on the other side of the track. And then when these Negroes do little riffraff stuff, you dump it off on us and then we all black. No, thank you. Take your losses with you. If you were Caribbean when you won an award, you're Caribbean when you sock somebody. Okay? If you Ethiopian when you got a PhD, you're going to be Ethiopian when you sucker punch somebody too. It ain't going to be where we all black. Take your L with you. I'm on that. Don't tell me nothing about no damn divisiveness, because the minute you win something, you go out of your way to make sure we as Foundational Black Americans don't get to share your win at all. You make sure you are not one of us. When you win something, when you do something constructive, when you do something positive, you go out of your way to say, hey, that was Somalian power. That was Trinidadian power right there. Okay. Keep that same energy. I ain't taking nobody else's losses, family. I'm on that for life. You're not going to shame me. What, nigga, you divisive? No, you were divisive when you were taking your wins and taking your wins on the other side of the street. Stay over there with your wins and your losses. I don't want no other group's losses. I ain't taking no losses from no other group. The garbage can is over where you just dump losses on us. You do something janky and then you just become black and we all black and then we have to answer for your... No, I'm good. I'm good for life. And I point out, anytime we see some janky behavior, hey, well, that nigga forehead looks kind of funny. Where is he from? Where your family from, player? That's the question now. Where your family from? That's what I want to know. When I see some behavior, where your family from? We checking hairlines and IDs. It's a new day. And y'all help bring it on, because y'all were the ones who wanted to divide. We're going to keep that same energy. It's hold your own nuts time. I'm on that for real. This ain't a phase or a fad. I'm on that. Yeah? We done enough with taking people's losses and we don't get to share the wins. Nah. If I see some kids beating up folks on a bus in a Caribbean area, that's on you. Ain't got nothing to do with me. Y'all don't come to me with that. Go holler at them about that. And dude sucker punching that sister like that. Yeah, that ain't us. FBA dudes don't really do nothing like that unless you on crack or something. You ain't really sucker punch. Because you can't really... In foundational Black American culture, sucker punching somebody, that's... Nobody pops their collar to that. Especially sucker punching a woman. Yeah, no. You don't come in foundational Black American society doing no shit like that. You don't sucker punch a woman. You get no points for that. But one of these Negroes from some foreign place, pulling a move like that. They do stuff like that. Let's keep it a buck. They do little stuff like that back home. So that's why you can do that and then go back to your little community somewhere outside of Foundational Black American Society and be safe. The only reason that dude at that CVS store is safe is because he ain't in no FBA community. If he was in an FBA community, somebody would have got at his ass already by doing that shit. We don't do that, man. Yes, that's the problem. We've had folks come in from all these other places doing little weirdo ass stuff, and then we get blamed as a group. Like, wait a minute, when did we start doing that? We didn't start doing that. These are people from other places doing that old goofy ass nonsense. You couldn't sucker punch nobody back in the day. You get packed out doing that, especially sucker punching a girl. Nah. And then you got some other dudes sitting here taping it, giggling with you. Nah. That ain't it. Yeah, they do that over there where they're from. A lot of places, they do all that stuff, and it's normal. They be beating women up in the streets and all of that. Nah. Yeah, that's a coward move, man. So we're calling that out, and we're going to continue to call that out. If you don't want it called out, don't come over here doing that shit. Because if we go over there to your, if we went to your country doing that, we would get called out. We would get called out heavy. If we went over there to your country sucker punching people, especially women. Yeah? So yeah, we're calling that stuff out. We're checking that stuff. Because people have a tendency to use Foundation of Black Americans as their garbage cans. The garbage is done. No more garbage. No dumping here. We're not doing that dumping stuff here. You're not dumping garbage on us no more. That's what it is. There's going to be respect all across the board. That's what it is. All right? Anyway, y'all, that's been enough of Tariq Radio. I think we've chopped up some good game today. Much respect to you guys. Remember the new movie, American Maroon, streaming on FBA Stream February 27th. The new museum opens to the general public February 27th, same day. There's going to be a very special VIP party on the 25th, that Saturday. Man, you guys got to stay tuned. It's in a few weeks, and we're trying to figure out how many tickets we will have left because so many people are already coming. So we're trying to figure it out so we can have some of you guys come on through because it's going to be a phenomenal event. So you guys stay tuned. It's going to be the hottest event in Los Angeles, in the country, really. This is going to be hot and groundbreaking. This is going to be groundbreaking, guys. I'm very excited about it. So anyway, guys, go to FBAExpo.com to get your tickets for the FBA Expo that's going down in Dallas, May 27th. Don't forget that. That's popping. All of you guys want to be vendors, get involved. That's going to be a great event. Memorial Day weekend out in Dallas, Texas. FBAExpo.com. Get your tickets. Get your vendor booth. We need some of our black vendors. All of y'all, if you got businesses, you need to be in the place showing off your businesses so that we can patronize you, so brothers and sisters around the country can know who you are, so we can all network with each other. That's a very, very important event, the FBA Expo in Dallas. Anyway, guys, much respect to y'all, man. Y'all have a great weekend. I'll chop it up with you guys Sunday. Pup Yakuta and Lilavuve to the family. Peace.